Okay. Good evening. We're not going to be reading from the book tonight, so let's have a few moments of quiet time together before we begin. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. You know, it used to be that on Saturday morning, the day of a meeting, a study group, Paul would get up and he would, for lack of better words, keep the day holy. He would wake up with the intent to keep his mind stayed on the truth, to not let his mind be distracted by, we'll say, the normal calls of daily activity. In a way, he would go into a cave and be contemplative and quiet in honor, you might say, of the truth that would come forth during the meeting. And then over the last year or so, Saturdays have become busier. Things needed to be done. Things which to him were not relevant to keeping the day holy, relevant to what might be transpiring in the evening in the study group. And he had a somewhat difficult time adjusting to that. He objected in his mind. He was not happy with the situation. And yet, as the months went by, Saturdays became busier and busier, not to mention the other days of the week. More and more, quote, distractions occurred. Until Saturdays became so full that he barely got back home in time for the meeting and barely had time to become quiet, having to, we'll say, be with me on the run. Be with me in the middle of being active. And this was an education for him. It was a learning for him, not a learning he liked. He wanted everyone else to respect the holiness of the day and the call for a holy frame of mind on that day, just as he wished to provide that attitude for that day. And everything was conspiring against his intent. But you see, the call for him, and indeed the call for all of you, is to find the holiness of the day in the activity of the day, in the activities of each day. You know, we've talked about the fact that when you do the two-step, you go into that place where God's laws prevail. Well, what everyone is needing to learn is that the place where God's laws prevail is in the minutiae of daily activities. You know, God's laws prevailing is going to look like something. God's laws prevailing are going to be manifest. Where? Well, I've said it over and over again. The only thing that's ever confronting you is the kingdom of heaven. You call it the world and universe, but that's a misperception, a misunderstanding. It is the kingdom of heaven. Where are God's laws going to prevail? Obviously, in the kingdom of heaven. And where is the kingdom of heaven? Right here. It's the only thing in your face. Now, Paul and Susan, but I'm addressing all of this relative to Paul at the moment. Paul has been very busy, very occupied for the past number of months with finding a new place for the foundation to move, for the activity to move, for Paul and Susan to be and do what they do. Oh, another distraction. But you see, where is the fulfillment of God's purpose going to show up? Where is God's will going to prevail? It's going to prevail in houses, on streets, in communities. It's going to prevail in the driving from here to there to look at this, to look at that. You see? And another very interesting and practical thing to learn and discover is that when you listen for the voice for truth, when you listen to the Holy Spirit, when you listen to that which is nothing more than your right mind, the guidance, the divine guidance you are going to get is going to have to do with streets and going here and looking at that and being in the place at the time where fulfillment of purpose is manifest. In other words, the minutiae of daily activities. So, you know, we have been reading from this book, A Course in Miracles, for a number of years. And we have been talking about wonderful spiritual ideas. Right now, I'm taking the opportunity to bring home the fact that these wonderful spiritual ideas are absolutely relevant to what? The kingdom of heaven that you're in the middle of, the minutiae of daily activities that seem not to be spiritually oriented at all. But that's just your belief. That's just what you've been taught. And you see what you expect to see based on what you've been taught. You know. So you go and look at a house, or you look at the house you live in, or you look at the building you work in, and you say, well, it's just if it's a building you work in, a structure of steel and concrete and glass, a physical object. And you're quite sure of it. But maybe it is a fluid movement of fulfillment of purpose of a pristine idea in the mind of God that is forever being made new by the movement of the mind of God. That is, envisioning it always in the moment of conscious awareness. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's purely the evidence, the current evidence, of a current living God. And it isn't just maybe, that is the fact. But that's not what you see, because you don't believe that's what it is. And you see what you believe. And so, because you believe that the world and universe is a material world and universe, not the kingdom of heaven, then you think that the laws of God prevail not here, but somewhere else where the kingdom of heaven is. And ultimately, if you are going to become a holy man or a holy woman, or you are going to devote yourself to holiness, you certainly will not expect your connection with God to have relevance to this material world and universe. And yet, if you're going to wake up, you're going to have to discover and realize that there is no other reality going on but the one in which God's laws prevail, because God is all. There is no alternative to the allness of God. So, in your approach to your holiness as the holy son or daughter of God, you are going to have to begin to expect to see the evidence of holiness right where you are in the minutiae of daily activities. Again, you think you know what things are, material world and universe. Well, let me say this. Susan and Paul, Chris and Judy, anyone associated with the work that they are doing and the activities of the Northwest Foundation for A Course in Miracles, are engaged in finding a new location. A new location has been found. Steps have been taken to secure it. An offer has been made. And the offer was accepted. And we're at a point where, a week from today, the total amount needed for its purchase must be in hand. Now, it appears as though all of this is dependent on things. It's dependent on Paul and Susan being willing to give their attention and energy and willingness and decisiveness to what the movement of God is leading them to do, to the guidance they are getting from me regarding the minutiae of daily affairs. It appears that another aspect of this movement, this unfoldment, is individuals making contributions, supporting the activity in tangible ways. So it could look as though it's just human beings in this material world and universe, like little ants scurrying around, doing their habitual processes of living and surviving and so on and so forth, you know, just as part of the material universe. Or it can be the movement of God, the laws of God prevailing in the minutiae of daily activities, which are really activities of the kingdom of heaven. You know, it could look as though it's dependent on individuals making contributions. And everyone can forget that there's a God, and that maybe God has something to do with it all. And I want to share this story, which most of you know. It's a story about a flood. And in the flood, the waters rise, and this man crawls up onto the roof of his house. And he prays to God to save him. He wants to have a miracle. He wants to have the evidence of God. And so while he's sitting on the roof, a rowboat comes by. And they say, "Jump in, jump in. We'll take you to safety." He says, "No, I'm waiting for God to save me." And time passes, and another form of help appears. And again he says, "No, no, I'm waiting for God to save me." And then, just as the waters get to the peak of the house, of the roof, a helicopter comes by and lowers a ladder, a rope ladder, to him to haul him to safety. He says, "No, I'm waiting for God to save me. God will save me." The helicopter flies on, and the waters rise. He's swept off the roof, and he drowns, and he goes to heaven. And when he gets there, he says, God, why didn't you save me?" And God says, "What do you mean, why didn't I save you? I sent the rowboat, and I sent another form and of help, and I sent a helicopter." You see. Now, there's, you might say, the laws of God prevailing in the minutiae of daily activities. Now, I want you to think about for a moment about the fellows in the rowboat, or the fellow in the helicopter, the pilot. The helicopter pilot gets a call on the radio, says, "Down there at the fork in the river, there's a man on the roof. Go down and get him." And the pilot in the helicopter says, "Hell, I'm not going to go down there and get him. You know, he was stupid for not having left when the announcement went out to go to higher ground. And he was stupid enough not to accept the help when the rowboat came. You know, I'm not going to go down there and help him." You see what I'm saying? The laws of God prevailing didn't prevail only with the fellow in distress on the top of the roof who had asked for help. The laws of God prevailing put a responsibility upon the fellow on the roof to recognize the help and accept it, to see the laws of God prevailing in the minutiae of daily activities, the simplicity of a rowboat with some men in the rowboat, and likewise with a helicopter. But also, the fellow in the helicopter had to be willing to cooperate with the laws of God prevailing by being willing to be the place where God's laws manifest. You see? If the fellow on the roof had accepted the help of the pilot in the helicopter, he would have been saved. And one could have said, "Well, thank God for helicopters, and thank God for a man who knows how to fly the helicopters, and so that this transpiring of events in the human condition, in the material world and universe, could occur. And one could say, God never had anything to do with it. But God's laws prevailing looks like something. And it looks like those who are helping. And it looks like those who are receiving help. And in other situations, it looks like a need existing that has an excellent purpose that requires support, and others support it. And so it looks like all the little human beings in the little anthill are circling around and bringing a little bit of money here and from that place to this place, and all this little, you know, material activity is going on, all manifesting the fight for survival of life, you see. Material, world, and universe. When that's not the only way to look at it. In fact, the necessity is to be able to recognize God moving in and as everything. You see? Paul, Susan, Judy, Chris, everyone who in any way participates in bringing forth these activities that the foundation is engaged in, making them available to everyone, because someone is listening to guidance, is a manifestation of God's laws prevailing. Where God's laws prevail in the minutiae of daily activities. And everyone who stands in receipt and gratitude for what is extended is being part of God's laws prevailing. Because the gift of love, recognized and received, is the wholeness of the movement of God in the minutiae of daily activities. And those who provide support for those activities when they are needed are also not being little mortals, you know, bringing their crumbs of money to the center of the nest. They are the will of God prevailing and manifesting the fulfillment of God's purpose. Absolutely everyone and everything. Is the presence of the movement of fulfillment of God, of God's purpose. Everything fits together. Everything fits together. It's why I use the word family. Because the movement of God into expression, which is the self-expression of God, manifests as the sons and daughters of God, every single one of you, as well as every single thing in creation. And it is a bonded, infinite manifestation that is not in bondage to anything, but is because it is the evidence of God's laws prevailing, the infinite expression or manifestation of fulfillment of purpose that does not originate in a puny, pea-picking little mind called an ego of a bunch of little bodies running around that has a brain in its head that somehow is able to express life and intelligence. Now, the simple fact is that if you're confronted by nothing other than the kingdom of heaven, if nothing other than the kingdom of heaven is available to you to experience, even though you can call it anything you want and you can imagine it to be anything you want it to be, then you're going to have to arrive at a point where the minutiae of daily activities, the infinite activities of this kingdom of heaven, will have to stop being perceived by you as a distraction from holiness, as a distraction from your giving your attention to listening for the Father's will and expecting to hear that it is something otherworldly that doesn't relate to where you are. Because if you don't discover and embrace the fact that the will of God prevailing, I'm going to say the laws of love prevailing, involves your embracing everything as the kingdom of heaven and therefore worthy of your love and worthy of your curiosity to see the Father in every aspect of it, you will be living in a false sense of spirituality that will absolutely inhibit you from waking up. It will absolutely inhibit you from having the experience of revelation because you will be blocking it absolutely by your expectation that revelation is not going to relate to where you are. Now, it is amazing what has transpired since the last couple of days of May relative to the move of the foundation and relative to the love that has been expressed and the contributions that have been received. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely wonderful. And everyone seems to be faced with, if you care about what's happening regarding this move, everyone seems to be faced with a deadline a week from today. A deadline that calls for action. Well, you know what? If you see yourself as a little piss ant in the anthill that must bring home the food, the goodies, the nourishment to the center of the nest and get a contribution in, you'll be missing the point. Because, you know, it wasn't a helicopter pilot that would have saved the fellow, and it wasn't the man in a rowboat that would have saved the fellow on the roof. It would have been God, and God's laws prevailing in the minutiae of daily activities that would have saved him. You see? So, let's drop the idea that you, as some pissant mortal, have some sort of a responsibility to fulfill. And instead, do the two-step. Ask God, what is the truth here? What is going on? How will your laws prevailing look? What will they appear to be? Because when you do the two-step and you shut up your thinking and you abandon privacy and you say, Father, what is the truth here? What do I need to know? You move into the place where God's laws not only prevail, but God's laws manifest to you as the awareness of what is appropriate for you. And if you insist on not reverting to being a pissant mortal, and instead insist on behaving like a holy son or daughter of God, you will listen, and you will act, and what you will hear and what you will do will be recognizably valuable in the midst of the minutiae of daily activities. Now, I'm not telling you what that's going to be. It could be you being filled with an awareness of how God works and how God is specifically working relative to this movement. For example, you might find yourself realizing that God doesn't do things partway. That God's movement is a fulfillment of purpose, not an almost fulfillment of purpose. Someone Paul knows has on her voicemail message, "You have almost reached me." Well, fulfillment is not something that is almost reached. The word fulfillment means completion, means wholeness. And so you may be filled with the undeniable experience of the fact that relative to this movement from one location to the other, and relative to the movement of the means to pay for it, to arrive where it's needed, is not something that will be almost met, but one that must be fully wholized, fully realized, and something that, for example, next Saturday, everyone can fully rejoice in the completion of. Someone else may indeed find themselves led to make a contribution. But you know what? If you think you're a pissant mortal, you might, like Paul does occasionally and did this afternoon, begin to feel like, oh, you must do something. You must do something to take hold of the situation. You must take some concrete action that will make a difference and do it without ever doing the two-step and without ever going to the place where God's laws prevail so that you might experience the meaning of the fact that God's laws prevail and thus act in harmony with it. You know, something that I am teaching everyone and have been for the last few weeks is that guidance relates to the minutiae of daily activities. When I was working with Helen Schuckman and dictating the course to her, I told her to go into a store, and there was a coat there for her. And indeed, she went in, and the coat was there, and she bought it. That event has been minimized, saying, well, that was a special accommodation to Helen, but doesn't really reflect the true nature of spiritual guidance or atonement. Well, I'm telling you, and I'm demonstrating to you, and I've been demonstrating most clearly to Paul and Susan, that I am able to talk about dollars and cents. I am able to talk about when and if to secure a loan, when to make an offer, when not to make an offer. I am able to give guidance that is relevant to the minutiae of daily activities. And I'm doing it, and Paul feels like he's doing it, in front of everyone. But I'm doing it in your presence so that you might learn to listen for guidance in a new way, so that you aren't off on some cloud nine, airy-fairy, irrelevant spiritual path. You see? Now, I am going to be very clear. As spiritual guidance is, I was going to say is inclined to be, but as spiritual guidance actually is, when you reach out for the Holy Spirit or your guide, and I'm going to point out that there is a need. The need is that the full balance needs to be in hand by next Saturday, we'll say by next Friday, so that the property does not go back on the open real estate market. That is the need. Why do I bring it up? Because you need to know where to bring your attention to. You need to know what it is that you need to be asking the Holy Spirit about. You need to know specifically how the prevailing of God's will looks relative to the need. And this is the case, whether it's a physical need you have, whether it's a relationship need you have, wherever needs are. You see? This is just practice. So that you approach the minutiae of daily activities in a new way, which leads irrevocably to healing or the resolution of the need. Because it causes you to experience completion, wholeness. And the joy that comes from your not being at odds with the Father in any way any longer. These are the nuts and bolts of what the Course is teaching. These are the nuts and bolts of waking up. These are the practicalities of spirituality, which perhaps you didn't think there were. Perhaps you didn't think that spirituality had practicalities, but lifted you above practicalities. You want to see the evidence of God where it counts, which is in your experience. And no one has been able to escape their experience. And that's because even though they've called their experience the human condition in a material world and universe, it's the divine life in the middle of the kingdom of heaven. And their resistance to the awareness of that fact has kept them from experiencing it. We're learning how to abandon what keeps us from having the experience. Maybe it stretches you. Paul certainly feels stretched. Susan certainly feels stretched. But the stretch is worth it because it pulls you out of the rut of your revered ignorance, which you're reluctant to let go of. I love you all, and I look forward to being with you next Saturday. So that we might rejoice together. Okay.